Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 14, 2020. Some national security officers open fire in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
According to the information I was getting, some were told to either join the Sudan Armed Forces or join the Sudan Rapid Support Forces in the active service so that they continue with their service. But some of them decided not to join either of the two.
And a ceasefire deal is reached with an umbrella group of South Sudanese rebels.
Tomorrow, the party will see the outcome of the two meetings between the president and the chairman of SPLM-IO and the joint meeting between two of them, and then we'll see the outcome of the meeting. We'll discuss it tomorrow in the meeting of all the parties.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some national security officers in the Sudanese capital were shooting in the air at various locations within Khartoum. The government spokesman and Minister of Information, Faisal Mohamed Salih, issued a statement confirming the shooting at various national security facilities in Khartoum. South Sudan in Focus reporter Michael Atit says streets within the capital are deserted and there is heavy deployment of army and paramilitary known as rapid support forces at key government institutions.
There are some officers, national security officers belonging to the operation department who have been actually, some of them have been demobilized and some of them decided not to. And some, according to the information I was getting, some were told to either join the Sudan Armed Forces or join the Sudan Rapid Support Forces in the active service so that they continue with their service. But some of them decided not to join either of the two. And today they are supposed to get their work benefits paid to them. On receiving the beginning of the process, it seems the amount of money which were like given to them, some decided not to go for. They say the money is so little, and they decided to start in, firing around. This happening in Khartoum, and also there are reports from El Obeid town in northern Kordofan, also the same thing happening there. And there is a report about a major general belonging to the national security being detained in El Obeid as well by some of his forces.
And these reports are coming from where? Who are the sources of these reports that you are telling me?
Reports about a major general being detained in El Obeid is on social media. And the Sudanese professional associations also mentioned that on their social media posts, and they actually called on the citizens to remain indoors, especially residents who are around the hotspot area in Riyadh and in Khartoum Bahri and also in El Obeid.
You have been on the streets of Khartoum this morning. What have you seen?
I'm actually just a few meters away from one of the barracks of the national security where I witnessed forces on the street blocking the road and firing gun on the air and even preventing vehicles, preventing people to pass by their barracks. This is something I witnessed, and I was actually among the people who were told to leave the scene, to leave the area. Around those areas, there is a heavy deployment of the Sudan Armed Forces jointly with the Rapid Support Forces trying to maintain their presence on the main installations. We could see some gunships flying all over Khartoum to monitor the situation in the ground. And there are reports of flights being suspended from Khartoum International Airport. Neither arrival or departure flights are not seen flying nor arriving into Khartoum International Airport because the areas where these things happening, these locations, are just few meters or few kilometers away from the Khartoum International Airport.
Have you made phone calls to the office of the government spokesperson to understand what is happening within the barracks of the national security?
I tried to call several numbers. I understand they might be in meetings, or I understand they might be engaged in discussion on how to solve the situation. I tried to call the spokesperson of the Sudan Sovereign Council, that is Mohamed Al-Fakih, but he was not picking his phone. I also tried to call the Sudan Armed Forces military spokesperson. The phone was also going through, and he was not picking the phone. Just this morning, the Deputy Sovereign Council, Deputy Chairman of the Sovereign Council, left Khartoum to Juba to begin the peace talk.
That's reporter Michael Atit speaking with me from Khartoum this past hour. The government of South Sudan and the South Sudan Opposition Alliance Movement signed a ceasefire agreement brokered by Santa Gidio community in Rome over the weekend. The chairman of the umbrella group, led by General Thomas Cirilo Swaka, says the deal marks the beginning of negotiations with the Kiir administration.
This meeting with Juba delegation, we discuss and we dialogue about the future of the country, and we agree in this declaration of Rome that the root causes of the problems are there, need comprehensive political engagement to be diagnosed so that they resolve to achieve sustainable peace in South Sudan, so that our people, for the first time, to start returning to the country, to develop their country and to prosper.
And so what are some of the commitments in this Rome Declaration? Could you explain to us what you, the opposition, have agreed on and what the government has agreed on?
We, with the government together, for us to start talking about the root causes of the conflict in the country in a very transparent, sincere way, we need a conducive environment. And therefore, it requires us to cease hostilities against ourselves so that we have this environment, at the same time to allow humanitarian support to reach our people who are suffering in different parts of the country.
And when I was looking at the document, I saw something there that you, the opposition, are proposing that IGAD should now get in touch with you so that you can go back, sit on the table with the government.
In fact, in this document, we requested the Santa Gidio organization to reach out to our neighbors, especially the IGAD countries, to support this this process in order for us to achieve what the people of South Sudan want. Of course, IGAD countries, these are our neighbors, and we cannot do without them. And therefore, we requested Santa Gidio to reach out to them and to African Union, the Friends of South Sudan, the Troika, and the rest of the international community to support this process at this critical time, so that South Sudanese, in a very comprehensive way, inclusive way, to sit down and dialogue and find solutions to the problems that are happening in the country for us to have a sustainable peace.
My understanding is you and General Paul Malong and Pagan Amun all said that you do not want to be part of the revitalized peace agreement. Now, with this development in Rome, are you joining the revitalized peace agreement?
No, we are not joining the revitalized peace agreement. We were clear from the beginning, from Addis Ababa into Khartoum, when this agreement was signed. All the parties within this alliance refused to sign this agreement for the reason that we have been telling the people of South Sudan and the world that this agreement did not address the root causes of the problem in South Sudan. And we, in fact, we talk about these root causes of the conflict that everybody know, and therefore we did not sign.
So with this new development, with the Rome Declaration, you are calling for an avenue for you to sit down with the government and discuss. What are you going to discuss?
We are coming to discuss issues pertaining to governance in our country, what type of better governance that can be accepted by the people of South Sudan, a governance system that can really protect our people, We want a governance system that serves our people, gives service to our people. We need governance in our country that is fair, that gives justice to our people, and so forth. All these issues you have been talking about. We are talking also about the states, the number of the states. We need also to resolve them so that we agree on states that are not problematic, like the 32 states now, whereby some community areas are annexed to another community, which is now causing problems, and we are not for that.
But your demands are coming at the time when the government and the IO are preparing themselves to form a transitional government of national unity by February. And you are bringing in new demands. It looks like you are taking people back to square one.
We are not taking people back to square one. This demand has been there, even during Addis Ababa and Khartoum negotiation, but it was neglected by the mediators, the grantors, especially Khartoum, who forced our people, who forced all the organizations, the parties, to sign this agreement against their own will. We thank the government of Juba and their delegation that came here for the first time to accept that there are serious root causes of the conflict that need really to be addressed so that we as South Sudanese now go home and build our country.
That's General Thomas Cirilo Swaka, chairman of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance Movement. He spoke with me from Rome, Italy, yesterday. Opposition leader Riek Machar arrived in Juba today for another round of talks with President Salva Kiir to resolve the major issues delaying the formation of a transitional government of national unity next month. A spokesman for the SPLM-IO says the two sides are still deadlocked over the number of states and their boundaries. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar arrived this afternoon for another face-to-face meeting with President Kiir tomorrow to try and resolve the biggest sticking point in the peace implementation process, the number of states and their boundaries. In January 2017, Kiir issued a presidential decree increasing South Sudan's states from 28 to 32. South Sudan originally had 10 states. Tut Keogatloa, Kiir's security advisor and chairman of the National Pre-Transitional Committee, which monitors the peace deal's implementation, says this week's meeting will be the last time Kiir meets with Machar to try to make compromises on unresolved issues ahead of forming a unity government next month.
There will be meetings tomorrow between the president and the Sudanese deputy leader and Dr. Riek to visit all the files and make a decision on issues which we have not been able to do.
Before meeting each other at the presidential palace, Kiir and Machar will hold separate consultations with various regional leaders, including IGAD Special Envoy Ismail Weiss. SPLM-IO spokesperson Manawa Peter Gatkwot says the two leaders will pick up where they left off last time they met in Juba some weeks ago.
A continuation of discussing the outstanding issues, especially the number of states and the boundaries, and also some of it is evaluation of the 50 days of 100 days of implementation of the peace agreement.
Gatkwot says Machar will spend 5 days in Juba in hopes of reaching a compromise on the number of states with Kiir.
Tomorrow, the party will see the outcome of the two meetings between the president and the chairman of SPLM-IO and the joint meeting between two of them, and then we'll see the outcome of the meeting. We'll discuss it tomorrow in the meeting of all the parties.
Also today, Sudanese General Mohamed Hamdan Daglo, a leading member of Sudan's Sovereign Council, arrived in Juba today to participate in peace talks between Sudan's transitional government and Sudanese rebel groups mediated by Juba. Dagalo, also known as Hemeti, met privately with President Kiir earlier today. Officials did not disclose details of the meeting. Gatluak, who is monitoring the Kiir-Machar talks, is also the chief mediator at the Sudanese peace talks underway in Juba.
There will be a big breakthrough in the peace talks with the Sudanese groups as we also make this one for South Sudan, and this will mark the last visit.
A committee headed by South Africa's special envoy to South Sudan and Deputy South African President David Mabuza is meeting to discuss potential compromises on the number of states and boundaries. Mabuza arrived in Juba yesterday. The Independent Boundaries Commission, which was created to determine the number of states and draw new boundaries, failed to come up with a decision on the matter. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, pollution is killing people across the globe. Find out more when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you are going to have a busy day, do you get up early?
I wake up the same time I wake up, no matter how busy I want to be. The only time I wake up earlier than expected is when I have production. Most of the times I'm into TV, radio productions, and sometimes you get the call time to be 5 or 4:30.
Psychologically, I do get nervous when I have like a big day ahead of me. So yeah, I have to get ready for that.
Yes, I do. But I do plan before the busy day. And then when I get up early, I make sure I implement the plan.
Yes, I get up early to prepare the day and make sure that I execute everything I'm supposed to do. In fact, it even starts from the previous day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment. Today we are talking about the effects of pollution. Pollution kills three times more than AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria combined. That's according to new estimates. It's one of the leading causes of death, but it's also a neglected issue in most of the countries around the world, despite the enormous toll. VOA's Steve Baragona has more.
Dirty air and water, lead poisoning, and polluted workplaces killed an estimated 8.3 million people in 2017. That's more than smoking. It's more than alcohol and drug abuse. It beats unhealthy diets, major infectious diseases, and war. But it gets less attention than any of those in much of the world. That's according to a new report by the Global Alliance on Health and Pollution, which includes researchers, national health ministries, NGOs, and the United Nations. Rachel Kupka is executive director.
It's pointing out that a global health crisis is in fact still undercounted, still underaddressed, still under-resourced.
The report says pollution from traditional sources, like smoky cook stoves and poor sanitation, are declining, while modern pollution from factories, vehicles, and toxic chemicals are on the rise. Kupka notes that international investment has focused on traditional pollution.
Water and sanitation, like I mentioned, has had a lot of investment in it, so the deaths are coming down, whereas the other issues in terms of modern pollution have not received the same or equivalent amount of resources and attention.
India and China had the most pollution-related deaths, followed by Nigeria, Indonesia, and Pakistan. The United States was seventh.
There's countries from almost every region of the world present in that top 10 list. So we really are all impacted. It doesn't matter kind of where you are.
Air pollution was the leading killer, making up 40% of the global death toll. Kupka says the good news is that measures already exist that can help reduce the impacts.
There are cost-effective things that countries can do, that communities can do, that cities can do, to implement and bring down their burden of disease from pollution.
Authorities can adopt and enforce emissions controls for vehicles and smokestacks, require personal protective gear for workers, and other measures already in place in many countries. Steve Baragona, VOA News.
Nigerian authorities have been battling the Islamist militant group Boko Haram for a decade in a conflict that has cost the lives of an estimated 35,000 people. In a recent ceremony, Nigeria marked Armed Forces Day by remembering the soldiers killed in the battle against the insurgents. From Abuja, Timothy Obiezu has this report.
The special remembrance event for troops took place in the Nigerian capital, and with smaller ceremonies in states like Borno, Adamawa and Yola, the epicenters of Nigeria's decade-long war against the Boko Haram insurgency. During the event in Abuja, about 200 widows of fallen soldiers and their relatives received food and financial support. Like many of the women, Olubunmi Adetunji's husband, a soldier, was killed while fighting Boko Haram in Maiduguri in April 2016. Since then, the Defense Ministry has been helping her care for their four children.
I thank the Defense Headquarters and the Army Headquarters for what they have been doing in my life. Because since then, 2016, I don't know how much they sell rice in the market. They provide rice, provision, and they give even the school, the children, sponsorship. They call us every year to pay the sponsorship.
The concert to honor fallen soldiers is tagged Tribute to Our Heroes, and this is the maiden edition. Top Nigerian entertainment stars, musicians and comedians were present to perform at the event. Lere Osonyin Tolu, a personnel official of the Defense Ministry, says the ministry plans to make it an annual event.
The aim of this project is to let you know that the future of defense staff, armed forces of Nigeria, and indeed the nation at large, have not forgotten you, and that you are never alone, as you are always in our prayers.
Nigerian authorities are battling a decade-long insurgency by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. An estimated 35,000 lives have been lost, including military officers at the front lines of the battle. Security expert Kabiru Adamu, who heads an Abuja-based security consulting firm, says events like the concert are good for boosting morale and inspiring confidence.
The insurgency has been waging for about 10 years now, so I think this is a very good development. There are issues regarding the relationship between the military and the public in the locations where they are fighting. So this type of morale-boosting activity, like the concert, I think it's a very good development.
As the military continues to battle Boko Haram, millions affected by the fight who are living in camps are hoping to return home. Meanwhile, families of fallen soldiers remember their loved ones and hope the killing will soon come to an end. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
From Abuja, we move to Senegal. Rather to Paris, where a corruption trial against a once powerful figure in world sports opened Monday, but was quickly adjourned. From French capital, Lisha Brand reports for VOA on the case against Lamine Diack, the Senegalese former head of World Athletics governing body, and five others.
The trial against 86-year-old Lamine Diack has been adjourned until June, following new documents from Senegal concerning testimony from Diack's son and co-defendant. Diack faces up to 10 years in jail and a heavy fine if found guilty for corruption and money laundering, following a four-year French investigation. He is accused of accepting millions of dollars in bribes to cover up tests showing extensive doping by Russian athletes during his 16 years as head of the International Association of Athletics Federation, or IAAF, now known as World Athletics. A former mayor of Dakar, Diack is under house arrest in Paris. He denies the charges, as do five other defendants. Among other charges, the prosecution claims Diack received more than $1.5 million in Russian funds to help support his friend Macky Sall's successful 2012 presidential campaign in Senegal. In a 2015 BBC interview, he denied allegations of bribery or extortion or an IAAF cover-up.
I'm convinced I know what is my department. I know how they work very, very hard about the fight against doping, and I didn't see any reason to make a cover-up of a doping case.
Britain Sebastian Coe replaced Diack as the association's head later that year. The scandal the trial centers on led to a ban against Russian athletes in several international competitions. Russia, as a country, is still banned from competing in world athletics. One of Dyak's sons, Papa Masata Dyak, who handled lucrative IAAF contracts, was also to be tried in absentia. He is in Senegal, where authorities have refused to extradite him despite international arrest warrants.
Les enquêteurs français, ils doivent, je pense, faire un effort.
Papa Masata Dyak earlier told France's TV5 Monde that French investigators should have made an effort to fly to Dakar and question him there. He was questioned by Senegalese investigators in November. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Gunfire was heard today in Khartoum, coming from at least two buildings that house intelligence services. The gunfire reportedly came from some national security officers attached to the operations department. Some officers were being demobilized today. Earlier, they were reportedly told to join either the regular army forces or Sudan's rapid support forces and decided to join neither group. Reports say they were due to receive their work benefits today, but some were not satisfied with that amount and began firing gunshots into the air. There have been no reports of casualties or injuries. A delegation from the South Sudan government and that of a rebel group from Juba have agreed to a ceasefire, according to a declaration from the Sant'Egidio community in Rome. The two sides discussed the root causes of the conflict and agreed the problem needs intense political engagement, according to General Thomas Cyril Swako, chairman of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance Movement, who spoke to this program. Cyrillo, who is in Rome, says the talks mark the beginning of negotiations with the Kiir administration. And finally, SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar is back in Juba, meeting again with President Salva Kiir. The two are picking up where they left off in previous talks, discussing possible compromises for South Sudan's number of states and their boundaries. Mr. Kiir's security advisor, Tutku Gatluak, says this will be the last time the president meets with Machar to discuss the issue ahead of next month's deadline to form a government of national unity. And that is a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song African Epic Collection by Sanfan Thomas. We've been listening to Sanfan Thomas with the song African Typic Collection. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for inviting us into your vehicles and homes. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.